Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Oh, everybody's going to college but me. Oh, I'm such a big loser. Oh, my life's going nowhere.
Dick.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is season 4444, episode 1 called
So Long, Farewell, Auf Wiedersehen, Goodbye.
And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Budding.
We made it to the college years.
Oh my God.
Did you think we ever would?
No.
Now there's four of them. Oh God, we'll get through it, Sarah. We'll get through this too. We can do it.
Will we?
I guess we'll see. Before we start, though, we want to remind you to go to glarkware.com, glarkware.com, to see the many shirts that will be of interest to listeners of this podcast, from Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, available in many colors, to the Blaze shirt, to Don't Be Such a Squeef. If you take a photo of yourself wearing these shirts and tag us on social media, we will make you famous to listeners of this podcast. And you can also go to previously.tv/ads to purchase an ad on this site, which also helps support us. It's $100 for a business message, commercial message, $50 for a personal message, such as a birthday greeting, a shout out, a thank you, what have you. We can create original material for that, or you can supply us with what you want. Let us know at previously.tv/ads. Now, season 4. Oh my God. Let's begin. So we get new credits and a slightly tweaked version of the theme song. I didn't clip it because whatever, you can listen to it. No one is that notable in their credit stool turn, except I would say Shannon Doherty looks like she remembers halfway through that she's supposed to not look like a total bitch. So I made a gif of it. You can see it in the visual aids. Tell me if you think I'm right.
You know I do.
Yeah. So let's start with our D story. Andrea embarrasses herself. We find
spoiler. Hope you all were sitting down for that.
Turns out Andrea has changed college plans since the season finale, and we hear about that in clip number 2.
So do you have any regrets about not going to Yale?
Well, I did at first, but you know, since Grandma Rose hasn't been feeling well, I don't know, it just made sense for me to stay in LA and go to California University with everybody else.
They never say in this episode exactly what is wrong with Grandma Rose, other than that she's a different lady than the last time we saw her. I mean, there's that. And then later, I think they make some vague reference to, like, Andrea has to learn how to inject her with insulin, maybe, because she has diabetes. So, like, that's the reason that you change your college plans? Okay.
But, like, she lives in the dorm, whatever. This is a few episodes away.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And why did staying in California necessitate your ironing your hair into the absolute, like, I'm trying to think of ways to describe how mumsy this hair is and how much older it makes her look.
Yeah.
She has that Conrad Bain all one color above the neck thing going on, first of all.
She's really tan. It's true.
Yeah, it's not indicated for a woman of her maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that weird, like, back of the bus shape. Hillary Clinton's hair on the campaign trail has looked like this. It looked like it last night as we record this. There was a debate last night, and her hair just looked like this immobile,
mm-hmm.
like, dog boy block. That my husband and I were literally like, what happens when she lies down to go to bed? Like, she's held off the pillow by it like it's a headgear of some kind. That's what's going on with Andrea. And then she is put in the most, like, ridiculous Sue Menger's contraption later in the episode and shot, like, somehow from down the beach, like, but physically down.
I know.
In a way that makes her patoot. It's, like, Kardashianly, epically big and unflattering.
Yeah.
Why do they hate her?
This
is your acting president.
Yes, of SAG.
This is the president of acting.
I hope she takes it out on all of them.
Now.
Yeah, every scene other than the one you're describing with Sue Maker's outfit, which we'll get to, she's in the shortest shorts. And, like, it's not like she has bad legs, but she has muscular quads. Like, she needs to be in a skirt. Sorry. Like, it's just, they're not flattering. They're really, really short shorts that don't work for her. I will say, though, despite everything that you said about the tint of her skin and her hair, which, and the cut, all of which are true, if she's already pregnant, it explains why her skin looks better to me. Like, she looks, her actual face, other than the tan part of it, she looks younger to me than last year, for sure. So, I don't know.
Yeah. It could also explain why she has, like, I don't know, some people get baby booty.
Yeah. It's true.
She may have gotten baby booty.
It's true.
Good for her.
One of our friends.
I have no booty, so.
No, me neither.
Respect.
One of our friends put up a picture last week on Facebook that was like, here's me right before Ben, her older child from when she was pregnant, right before Ben asked me if I was also growing a baby in my butt.
Oh, God.
Sometimes it's a fair question. Not in her case. She looked great. Anyway, Andrea takes advantage of Steve's borrowed beach house, which we'll get to. And its proximity to, let's just play it, clip number 3.
Andrea, join us for breakfast.
No, I think I'm going to take a walk up to the lagoon before it gets too hot.
Would that happen to be the lagoon where Gil Myers lives?
Got a breakfast, Brandon.
You don't get to...
Not that anyone's going to have any appetite now.
No. Also, watch your tone, Brandon. However, also watch your tone, Andrea, because yes, that is where you're going. So quit acting all snitty about it. Sure enough, this fucking public school teacher is sitting on the deck of his Malibu beach house, and I don't care if he owns or rents. No. Unless he has family money, which, why do I even care? After this episode, we never see him again, but it's inexplicable.
Although, there is a line at some point, isn't there, where she asks the, like, fiance confusion. She's like, is that your chef?
Yeah.
Like, yes, Andrea, a public school teacher who was almost fired for bad touching Sue Scanlon has a chef.
Has a chef. Use your head. Not even the rich people on this show have chefs. Like, give me a break. Anyway, whatever. He's the last to hear that she's not going to Yale and looks both shocked and grossed out as she explains in clip number 4.
Well, with my grandmother being sick and the alumni council throwing more and more scholarship money at me, they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. I take it you don't approve.
No, not at all. California U is a fine academic institution. It's not Yale.
Gil.
Hey, I'm just teasing you. So what if I spent hours slaving over your letter of recommendation? And even bugged the dean of admissions on your behalf?
Don't make me feel guilty or anything.
No, obviously you had your reasons for not venturing back to Yale. And I'm sure a high percentage of them were probably even valid.
Dick!
Oh...
No, it's just not okay. Like, all schools are probably good, even if she did chicken out of going to Yale. Like, do you say that to her? Do you have that kind of relationship? No. Like, just
let it
go.
Well, and also, why is she there? Like,
yes. I mean, we know
why. I kind of put some of this on her, that she's clearly going there seeking his sign-off or something from him. That's like, if it were me, I would avoid him.
Yeah. Seeking his peen off, I think. But anyway,
Sorry.
To her credit, she immediately says goodbye and makes to leave, forcing him to act like he was kidding. And she's just so easy to tease and see who is so lucky to have her. But the damage is done. And later, as Sarah said, I have in my notes, poor Gabrielle Carteris stomps like a washerwoman up the beach back to Gil's. She's in this, like, halter top and, like, long chambray matching skirt, and they've put her in these wedges that are like, just take them off to walk on the beach. Like, she looks like she's in so much pain walking up the dunes. It's not graceful, and like Sarah said, from behind and below, it's really, really mean. Anyway, she goes back to Gil's to tell him some shit, clip number 5.
My not going to Yale was one of the toughest decisions that I've ever had to make. And I don't appreciate that you treat it like some kind of joke.
Andrea.
And I don't care if you think that I have wimped out because I'm staying here. This is my life. I don't have to justify myself to you or to anybody else. So what if I don't go to the God Almighty Ivy League? And really, who cares? What am I doing?
It's okay. It's okay.
She falls on him to hug him for way too long.
Come here, sit down.
Oh, Gil. Oh, I feel like I missed the train and it's never coming back from me.
It's like I said the other day, California University is a great school. And if you don't like it, you can always transfer. Or here's a revolutionary idea. You could take some time off to find yourself. But whatever you do, just remember no one's keeping score but you, okay?
I'm so embarrassed.
So you bit my head off. What's a little venting between friends? You want to stay for lunch?
I don't want to put you out.
We're just having tuna salad. I'll tell Maggie to set another place.
Who's Maggie, your chef?
My fiancé. You never met her?
No.
Come on in, I'll introduce you.
Great.
I do
kind of
like
leave.
That. Great.
Nana.
I, by the way, choose to believe this is the same bowl of tuna salad from the episode of Melrose Place that Heather submitted for the canon on Extra.
I made the same note. Yeah.
Just the one Aaron Spelling Productions bowl of tuna that they keep in the back. Anyway, that's the end of that. And they never saw Gil again, as far as I can recall. At least he got a haircut.
Thank God.
He does look better with his haircut.
That's true. He does.
Credit where it's due. Moving on to our C plot. Kelly has hassles all around the world. So David has been trying without any success to find a place to live. Apartments around campus are expensive. As we said in the last podcast, his dad is a rich oral surgeon, so I don't know why he can't chip in, but whatever. Donna exposits that she and Kelly won the freshman lottery and got into the dorm. David tries to work out a roommate situation with Steve, who turns him down flat. Of course he does. And then Kelly somehow knows to call this beach house, which we'll get to, that she's never been to or heard of from her car on her cellular phone. And she's back in LA on her way over. When she comes in, she's got her bangs half grown out. There's a picture. They don't look good.
No.
We've all been there. Outside, she tells them about her great time in Dillon with Dillon in the south of France, not in Dillon, although who knows what they did. He's still there.
Ew.
Sorry. I'm actually not sorry. Why do I keep saying I am? I'm not. He's still in France.
Going to a pegging place with that guy? You need to show a little remorse, even if you don't feel it. So I'm never sleeping again or eating solid food.
Anyway, Brenda asks if everything is okay, and Kelly says it is. She went to Barcelona to see her dad, and Dylan's now in Greece. So David then asks Kelly what she's doing her very first day back from Europe and winds her into helping him look at apartments. She very nicely agrees to do it. So then David, Donna, and Kelly argue about whether David should live at the beach, which if CU is really supposed to be UCLA, he should not. That is far. Kelly wants to give David her dorm spot and live at the beach herself. Donna is offended and in the sun cross-eyed, which you can see in the visual aids. It's so mean how they shoot her in the scene, too. She's like staring right at the sun, apparently. Donna suggests that Kelly move in with Dillon, but Kelly says they're not on speaking terms. And since Tori is apparently, as I said, staring directly into the sun, she moves her face exactly long enough for one what before her face snaps back to squinting. I made a gif of this, too, because it's so weird. It's like, what? And then total lack of surprise again. Anyway, Kelly explains in clip number 6.
You heard me. Europe wasn't exactly as picturesque as I made it seem. What happened? Everything was actually très joli until Dylan found out he didn't get into Berkeley. They didn't even put him on the waiting list. And at that point, we had been at that old castle for about 2 weeks. And frankly, I was starting to get a little claustrophobic, being in the same place with the same people who hardly spoke to me and who hardly showered. When I said something to Dylan, he just checked out on me.
Wait, you mean he left without even saying goodbye?
Donnie, you have to promise not to tell anybody what I'm telling you.
I crossed my heart, hope to die.
We broke up.
Cal.
Anybody who says being in a good relationship is easy has never been in a good relationship.
You've never been in a good relationship.
Yeah, you hated each other. This is overdue.
However, having one fight and then like checking out of the hotel without leaving a note when you're in Europe is fucking cold.
Wait, is that what he did?
Well, she says he just checked out on me.
Oh, I just assumed she meant like mentally.
Well, Donna said, wait, you mean he left? And Kelly doesn't correct her. So I assume that's what happened.
Okay. Yeah, none of this, like, I don't buy that this, it comes up so late in the episode, and I don't buy that she wouldn't have told anyone.
Well, I buy that she wouldn't have said anything to Brenda, because that's the last scene that she was in before this.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, so then we're seeing a landlord, Mr. Pitt, who will have an important role later this season, an important slash gross role, shows David with Kelly and Donna through a two-bedroom apartment right on the beach. Kelly impetuously says that they'll take it. She's going to be their roommate. But Donna gets pissed at Kelly, saying that she'll never make it through a year in the dorm by herself in the city where all of her friends and, at this point, her parents also live, but whatever. But then the landlord says there's a three-bedroom unit upstairs. Donna agrees to take it, although obviously no one but David has thought this through at all in clip number 7.
Guys, how can we afford to live here?
We'll figure something
really?
Out.
Really?
I'll need the first and last month's rent and a security deposit.
Hey, sure, no problem. We'll get it to you as soon as they explain to their mothers why they won't be living in the dorm. I'm sure Donna's mom will be real understanding.
Ooh, good point about Felice. Jackie probably doesn't care that she only has to get a two-bedroom instead of a four-bedroom for these deadbeats, but yeah. And also Donna reacts to that for like a half an hour before the act out, which you can also see in the visual aids, including the blackout, because I made a gift.
Yeah, this has been an increasing problem at in sort of the back half of season 3. But this episode, like the act outs take like a full minute before it even starts fading to black.
Yeah.
And then the person is just standing there like, reaction. Oh, my God. Get on with it. Please. It's not like you couldn't sell ads on this shit. Hurry it up.
Later at the Peach Pit, there is stuff before Donna gets there in clip number 8.
Seriously, Nat. If you were to open up a Peach Pit in Paris, it would only be a matter of time before you were bigger than Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, but then I'd have to walk around the Champs-Élysées yelling out,
hey, Dean! Dean!
Who's Dean?
I don't know.
Would you know the Jerry Lewis reference without knowing Dean Martin? I don't know. Maybe you would. Maybe that was the only thing they knew about Jerry Lewis other than the telethon.
Could be.
Anyway, Donna shows
Moving
up.
Moving on.
Yes. Donna shows up and reports on her conversation with Felice. Turns out Dr. Martin got a fellowship in Houston at the start of the school year, which makes total sense. That's all how that works. Not. And her mother wants Donna to go with them. And I guess for Donna just to lose a semester or possibly year of school. That seems like, again, another good idea. But anyway, Felice was resistant to the idea of Donna not just staying in LA, but living off campus. But Donna talked her into it by blatantly lying that David was not going to also be living with her and Kelly. What could possibly go wrong? We all know where this is going, so let's move on to our B plot. Brandon meets a New Yorker. Brandon toils at the grill at the Peach Pit. Steve comes in wearing one of the ugliest shirts of his whole shirt-wearing career. You see in the visual aids. But he also has good news to go with his bad shirt. He got off the waiting list at CU. He dangles a key, and Brandon makes a very timely legacy key joke. But it's the key to a beach house in Malibu that they're going to be living in for the last 2 weeks of the summer. There's some Steve's bad handwriting, shitty house misdirection stuff that's not worth commenting because, of course, the house that Steve is taking them to is lovely. It's some producer that's trying to kiss up to Samantha, who owns this place. It comes with equipped with its own outdoor boom mic, which you can see in the visual aids as well. Steve and Brandon stand on the deck and ogle ladies. The next morning after dropping off Brenda, which we'll get to, Brandon returns to the beach house, which is still a mess after a party they threw, and Steve and Celeste haven't started cleaning up yet because they were fucking. Steve wants to go for breakfast, a second breakfast for Brandon, and deal with the mess later because he is a really great house guest. Invite him to stay with you soon. Later, Steve is crabby after losing a game of beach volleyball to what he calls an inferior player. Brandon's outfit is horrendous. It's also in the visual aids. He's in a tank top with a flannel plaid shirt tied around his waist and like two long shorts and high top, like white Jerry Seinfeld sneakers. It's terrible. Celeste and Steve are going to go goof off some more while Brandon gets started on the cleaning. And Celeste, I really expected better from you. As Brandon gets a beer bottle out of the toaster oven that somehow ended up in the living room. And I know these people are teenagers, but what happened at this fucking party? They're all like in their late teens at this point. It's really an unacceptable amount of crazy mess, even for a TV show. We see legs running past the kitchen doorway. And then Jenny Callender, wearing one of Steve's ugliest blouses, leaps out brandishing mace at Brandon. And why don't you talk a little bit since you referenced Jenny Calendar at the end of the last episode negatively, you were not a fan?
I was not a fan.
Okay.
She was a bitch. And I think it's just this actress's face. yeah, not a fan. But she tends to get into these roles where, like, the writing for her is unnecessarily, in my opinion, strident or unrealistic. And here we have, like, paranoid, tough New Yorker trope, right, which in the hands of this show, whatever. Yeah. I will say she is very pretty.
Yes.
And her hair looks amazing.
Yep.
Very glossy.
So shiny.
And this is the longest, I should have gone back and timed it, because this was the longest of some very long act outs where, like, she is brandishing the mace and doing the, like in that song, Kung Fu Fighting, like, everyone is waving with the hand. Like, she's doing that for a year and a half while Brandon is still clutching the toaster oven and making about to bray faces. And when we do come back, he makes a gesture of punching her in the face.
Yeah. I made a GIF of that.
Oh my God, I fucking hate him so much.
You had a still shot, but I GIFed it because it needed to be seen in all its unglory. It's really not okay, especially given what we find out about her in the next episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, when we come back from commercials, Celeste and Steve are finally making their way back to the house from which they hear Brandon's braying emanating. They run in to investigate, which is when we find out the ugly bloused mace wielder is Jill, daughter of Guy, the owner of the house, and she and Steve have known each other since they were kids. And once he understands the situation, Brandon is very gracious in clip number 9.
You know this person?
It's Jill Fleming.
It's Guy Fleming's daughter.
Jill, how are you?
A little shaky.
You're a little psychopath.
Brandon, what is the matter with you?
What's the matter with me? I come in here to get a soda. Next thing I know, I'm involved in chemical warfare.
Guess I overreacted a little bit.
A little bit? You always walk around with a can of mace? Wait a minute, are you related to Emily Valentine?
Well, excuse me, but I walk into my father's house expecting to find my father, and instead I find the door open, the house completely trashed, and some strange guy walking around with a toaster oven. So I jumped to the conclusion that we're being ripped off. Silly me.
It's pretty funny if you think about it.
You tried to poke my eyeballs out.
I'm sorry, I really am. I'm a New Yorker, I get paranoid.
She has
don't
nothing
apologize.
To apologize.
It's your house.
Yeah. It's your dad's house, the and they
fucking
shat all over
it. The guy with a boothbrush on his head is wandering around with a toaster oven that has a bikini top in it.
Yes, Dave?
I was going to say, I am from New York, and I'm here in California doing some research on this new thing called the California dish. I understand it's melon and cottage cheese. Can you tell me more about it? I need to report back to the Greek diner.
The California plate. She also does
it is our pleasure to report back to you.
Nice. She also does a little cringe here that's supposed to be cute and isn't. It's also in the visual aids. I made a GIF. Steve thinks it's funny, but Brandon is very determined to continue hating Jill. She says she wanted to surprise her dad, who's out of town, and insists to Brandon that she's normal. Like, why care what he thinks of her? Also backing up for a second, that whole, are you related to Emily Valentine? That's not a funny joke to anyone who doesn't know who that is. Like, that's would not anyway. Stupid.
Well, and it's not a funny joke to anyone who does.
True. It's just not funny, but it's especially unfunny in the context of the show. But
yeah.
Anyway.
And what if she had said yes?
Yeah.
Then where do you go with your joke, Bran?
Well, Brandon starts to soften, judging by the sex eyes he starts to give Jill, also in the visual aids. She comments on the state of the house in a much less furious manner than I would under the circumstances. Brandon promises that they'll clean it up and leave, but she says they might as well all stay. And Steve finally gets around to introducing Celeste, who is already over Jill and Celeste, and Steve's obvious boner for her. And Sarah made a gorgeous gif of Celeste's face like, uh-huh. Clearly not liking any of this, and I don't blame
Jennifer
her.
Jennifer Grant, 2016. Mm-hmm. She was just like, now.
Yep. Her hair also looks great, too. At the beach house, Jill is obnoxious about the quality of LA bagels. In a really, like, I don't necessarily disagree with her as someone has lived in both places, but, like, they bought them, so maybe don't be a dick about it. Jill and Steve flirt and talk about how she taught him how to French kiss when he was a kid, and Celeste gets pissed and claims she's going to go get one of the bagels, which she thinks is delicious, but when Steve follows her, she tells him it's obvious he still wants to bone Jill and is currently ignoring Celeste, and lays out the situation in clip 10.
And if you ever want to be with me again, you better just remember where your bagel's buttered, buddy.
Just break up with him now and save yourself the hassle, I say.
And you know what?
Yeah.
If you're going to complain about the bagels, don't then say butter on a bagel, because that's not what you do.
That's the one that wasn't.
She didn't complain about them.
Well, then I'll just shut up.
She's the ignorant Angelino who I guess is putting jelly on it. I don't really understand what.
Right.
Also, fucking everyone in LA is from here anyway. Come on. Bagels are fine. Get over it.
Later, Steve and Brandon have a thoughtful discussion on relationships in clip 11.
With Celeste, all I do is go boo and she's on me like white on rice. Feeling the yolk, my brother. Had no idea she was so possessive.
Feeling the yolk? Ugh.
My brother? Also, she has put up with so much of your Kelly-only shit and somehow got roped into making the sign for Brenda's going away party. She's met Brenda, what, twice now?
Yeah.
Fuck both of y'all. Ugh.
Yes. To Brandon's credit for once, he informed Steve that he was flirting with Jill pretty hard right in front of Celeste. Steve seems to think he's entitled because he's wanted Jill all of his life. We learn that she's 2 years older than they are. An eternity. Steve also thinks that she's flirting back with him, but Brandon tells him not to risk what he has with Celeste, which is good advice. Later, Brandon and Celeste are skipping stones when Steve comes upon Jill sunbathing topless, and this ensues clip number 12.
Ollie, ollie, oxen free.
Going for that full body tan?
Yeah, just trying to unwind a little. Trying to get a handle on all my urban angst.
Well, you definitely have a nice set of handles. Not that I was peeking or anything.
Sure, Steve.
I like that she's like, whatever, she doesn't even acknowledge him because he's a total non-entity to her, and rightly so. He tries to confess his misdeeds, but she's not interested and just wants to know about Brandon and his situation. Steve says they make a perfect fit. She looks like she's eager to find out and then heads down the beach to stick her handles in his face. And that's the end of the storyline. Thank God. Moving on to our A-plot, bad times in Minneapolis for Brenda Beverly Hills. So as Brenda arrives for her farewell party at the beach house, Shannon Doherty acts like she already has a foot and a half out the door in clip 13.
Hey, look who I found.
Well, still wearing her colors.
Came straight from the beach club.
Did Henry give you a little farewell bonus? Atta girl.
Brad, I'm gonna miss you. Ugh, I'm gonna miss you too. But it's like we talked about. It's time for all of us to move on with our lives, right, Brandon?
Came straight from the beach club. Different strokes.
Right, Brandon. Yeah, from the beach club to a beach party, mm-hmm. Wearing 10-hole black Doc Martens and big old puffy socks.
Yeah, the dress is cute though that she changes into.
Yeah, it is.
Has that elastic torso. You guys, if you were alive in the 90s, you know what we're talking about. So as Brenda, as I said, Sarah just said, also wears socks at her beach party. Brandon is still bad at chewing gum. Andrea brings her a goodbye gift in clip number 14.
It's just a muffler.
A muffler? She can wear it with her dungarees.
Oh my God, seriously. This is also an episode that contained the word Murgatroyd. Yeah. Like,
what's a muffler?
Who wrote this? Jackie
in this
Mason?
Context.
A scarf.
Oh, okay.
What did you think it was, a muffler for her car?
Well, I Have assumed never... it probably wasn't, but I hadn't heard of a muffler as a synonym for a scarf.
Really?
No.
Huh.
I think they use it in the Peanuts cartoon.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Uh-huh.
Which would underline our point, ancient point.
We don't get to find out if Nana knitted it herself, however. Tony is also at this party, is still trying to hook something up with Brenda to no avail. Brandon manages to rouse himself the next morning, apparently hungover, even though I thought he didn't drink as he brayed last season, but whatever. He sees Brenda on the deck looking at the ocean. He's going to get her to her plane, but first they have to go to the Peach Pit, where Nat shows her the new menu, which now features Lavoine's honey pie barf, which I assume all Walsh's will.
Nat, phrasing.
I assume that all the Walsh's will forever after enjoy it on the house, of course. Nat has also had Brandon's uniform shirt framed and hung on the wall. Like there's
under
never,
glass.
There's never been anyone who worked there longer than a year and a half without haranguing Nat out of business deals. Anyway, then he says this in clip 15.
Well, you didn't think I was going to make you work here forever, did you?
Okay, is that...
Is Duke paid off yet?
Is that his way of saying that Brandon doesn't have a job anymore, because it sounds like he's announcing it to Brandon and that it's news to him. I don't know. It's very weird. It's just me.
And why wouldn't he? Okay. Who cares?
Brandon and Brenda have a very generic goodbye because these two don't actually like each other in real life. Jim comes in for a hug. Brenda grabs Mr. Pony and then gives her bedroom one last emotional look. And when we next see her, she's in Minneapolis where there is fake Mary Tyler Moore Show sound-alike music in clip 16.
She is a female and she's going to succeed, throwing headwear up towards the top of the buildings.
Use B-roll that is from the 50s at best. And it's not even B-roll.
No,
it's like a picture from a postcard of like a post office in St. Paul. Okay.
I don't even think it might be in St. Paul. I'm pretty sure I saw that building in Roswell, New Mexico when we were there, to be honest with you. But anyway, this is also our first chance to meet Cindy's well-meaning gas bag of a mother in clip 17.
The experts are saying that the climate is changing at an alarming rate.
It's called global warming.
For all I know, it might be true.
It is true, Mother. It's called global warming.
Good to know we're past that debate 23 years later. Sigh.
I mean, I sort of love that scene. Like, there's a lot in this that is like, it goes on too long. Cousin Lindsay?
Yeah.
Is it? I didn't check this, but if she has any other credits besides this on her IMDb page, I will be very surprised. She is terrible.
Yeah.
But she looks like
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, she looks like the girl version of that kid who was Josh Baskin's friend in Big, that little blonde kid. She looks like the girl version of that kid.
Huh.
Anyway.
Yeah, she does.
Maybe they are brother and sister. I didn't check either. No one cares. Move on.
Yeah. Moving on. But Carol Potter is like really good at this. Like, it's called global warming. Like, just the fact that you can never sort of like let your mom have anything.
Yeah.
Still.
Mm-hmm.
Also, where were these people at the actual graduation?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, you'll pay them now? Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
anyway,
yeah. I like seeing this side
of
Carol.
Let's get to bitch, Darla.
Cindy being the put upon daughter, because this is the first time we've seen her play like any kind of irritation, practically. So it's kind of funny to see her be like, yes, it's called global warming. Anyway, in the backseat, as we said, Brenda's tween cousin Lindsay is dying to hear all about Beverly Hills. Apparently, it has not taken long for all of these people to run out of conversational topics since they left the airport in clip 18.
Well, they're predicting this is going to be the coldest winter ever here.
Right, something to look forward to.
Don't worry. They're always saying things like that so everyone will go out and buy a new overcoat.
Yes, but this winter is supposed to be particularly brutal.
Cousin Brenda, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Have you ever eaten at the Hard Rock Cafe?
A couple of times.
Wow, what about Planet Hollywood?
Well...
Oh, wait, I know what I want to ask you. What about Toontown?
Lindsay, will you let Brenda come up for air?
Sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, Brenda, I will never forget what happened the night before your mother started at the U. She broke out in hives.
Mother, that wasn't me. That was Paula.
But you were plenty nervous too, dear.
I didn't break out in hives. Besides, it's perfectly natural to be a little uptight when starting a new situation.
I didn't say it wasn't, dear.
Fine. Let's just drop it.
All I said was that both you and your sister were a little tense before you started college.
Cousin Brenda, are you tense?
Are we almost there?
No.
Yes.
That was sort of cute. That was a little cute. However, I don't know why Brenda is being such a bitch about the Minnesota weather, like it's anyone else's fault that she's there. No one told you to apply to the University of Minnesota. The weather is the weather. Deal with it.
Well, and her response to like the questions about Beverly Hills are pretty weird. Like, first of all, they live in Minneapolis, not like it's a proper city with
right.
sports teams. I'm not sure why everyone is acting like they don't even have cable.
Right. I mean, if it doesn't already have a Hard Rock Cafe, I'm sure it got one like 6 months later at the Mall of America.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, you know, it's Minnesota, not Bahrain. Like, it's not like they don't have this stuff or can't have, like, seen it on MTV. It's very weird. But then Brenda's sort of like, I've made a huge mistake. Like, because people are asking you about Toontown, a 10-year-old? Who cares?
Yeah. Anyway.
Like, I'd be a little more concerned about your grandma's accent, which has zinged from Georgia to the Kennedys of Boston to I don't even know where.
Yeah.
At no time was it in the Midwest anywhere, so you should have that looked at.
Good point.
This is a boring episode, can you tell? How about now? Can you tell now? Do you want to talk about the weather? How you doing?
Then we're watching that terrible B-roll of the University of Minnesota campus while Lindsay peppers Brenda with more questions. Brenda finally asks her to stop just in time for Cindy to come out of the dorm with the very preppy Darla. A Katie and a Jan that they know from junior high also live on their floor. And then Darla asks a stupid question about Tom Cruise and sets Lindy off again. Good job, Darla. Later, underneath a beefcake poster, which you can see in the visual aids of three shirtless male cyclists. I don't know. Maybe you can explain. Brenda and her old friends talk about their schedules in clip 19.
Well, if I can get this schedule, I want Thursdays off.
What are you taking, Bren?
Introduction to Dramatic Literature, the History of Broadcasting, and an acting workshop.
What?
People usually go out to California to take acting workshops, not the other way around.
I guess I'm starting a new trend.
Brent has always been very trendy.
So I gotta ask, do you know any movie stars or kids of movie stars?
Just Samantha Sanderson.
Gosh, I bet he's pretty screwed up, huh?
Yes.
No, I actually see he's a really good guy.
He's not a snob?
He's my brother's best friend.
Is he spoiled?
No more than anyone else.
Anyone from Beverly Hills, that is.
So what kind of car does he drive?
He drives a Corvette. And my ex-boyfriend drives a Porsche. And most of my other friends drive BMW convertibles. They shop in Rodeo Drive, and they're all incredibly shallow, phony, and brain dead. Are there any other stupid questions that I can answer?
Brenda!
Look, I'm sorry, but you guys are making me feel incredibly self-conscious. It's not like I'm Brenda Walsh. I'm Brenda Beverly Hills.
You're right. I'm sorry. But you know, it's just the name Beverly Hills. It conjures up all these images and stereotypes.
Well, the way I see it, if someone doesn't like me because I'm from Beverly Hills, that's their loss.
Absolutely.
And if someone only likes me because I went to West Beverly High, well, that's not going to work either. The truth of the matter is, L.A. isn't that much different from the rest of the country. It really isn't.
Well, okay.
I mean, yes and no. And like, but to be fair, do you know any movie stars is a pretty dumb question.
Well, no, it's definitely dumb, but like object to it on that basis.
Yeah.
Be like, did you hit your head real hard this morning on Babe the Blue Ox? Because these questions are idiotic, even for a grade schooler.
Yeah. It's true. But she shut them down. And I'm sure everyone will remember this. Like, oh, this is what Brenda's like now. Good to know. Anyway, the next day, Grandma drives Cindy and Brenda back to their old house and they just pull right on up into the driveway like they still fucking own the place. So I guess Brenda takes after her. And then they ring the doorbell to try and get in for a tour, which has anyone ever tried to do this in real life other than, you know, you see it on TV, but if someone showed up and was like, hey, I used to live here, it'd be like, neat, see you later. Like, yeah, no, seriously. You can't come in.
That actually did happen to me.
Really?
Yeah. I was like at my parents' house for, it was our fifth high school reunion and I was having it at the house and I was like cooking all the pasta. I don't know why, because girls school graduates. No one can have it me.
Yeah.
And these two women show up to say that they grew up in the house I grew up in, which my parents do still live in. Mm-hmm. And they were in town for, you know, grad or like reunion weekend. And would I mind? And I was like, no. So they like showed me all around and took me through like, well, here's what your parents renovated when you were like two and don't remember. And there used to be stairs here and da da da. And it was kind of cool. But huh. I think generally speaking, no, that does not happen.
Oh my God. If someone showed up at this house and said they used to live here, I would never, ever let them in. Would you?
No.
Here's the thing. I know who used to live in my current house. They still live next door and they're hoarders. So I guess my take on this is maybe a little little different that I'm sort of like, whatever, everyone just roll through here. Who gives a shit?
Perhaps. All right.
I got my base.
I swear you're the first person I've ever met who has done that. And I'm glad it worked out and they didn't come in and murder you.
I know they were like two little ladies in like broomstick pleated skirts and like little Lennon glasses. And they were saying about how they used to like make out with boys in the garage. And I'm like, they had boys back then? I'm the worst. Yeah. You know,
fair enough.
This episode is really boring, you guys. Maybe you noticed.
At Brenda's old house, Brenda tells Lindsay a story about her and Brandon's favorite tree. Oh, no, I guess Cindy tells it. Makes Brenda remember how good her childhood there was. But then she gets bitten by a mosquito and she's like, fuck Minnesota again. Cindy tells her to calm down and give Minnesota a chance, basically. And then Brenda comes back to her room in the dorm from some family party. Darla stayed home from a different party on campus to see if Brenda might want to go with her. She soulfully tells Brenda she's so glad they're roommates. And Brenda decides to get over herself and go to the party. And as soon as they've walked out and turn off the light, clip 20.
Clip 20.
I am sorry, monsieur. There is no answer. Shall I try another number?
No, thanks, Ricky.
No, operator, it's okay. Maybe I'll try again sometime.
Electric guitar, would you like some decaf? But
how are people getting these phone numbers? Like, how did Kelly have the number for the beach house? How does Dylan have this phone number that's like a day old? I don't know. Anyway, that's the end.
I don't either.
I don't know, and I don't care.
I was pleased to see that Brenda and I had the same dorm phone.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah. Beige princess phone.
Sure. Well, that's it. First episode of season 4. As Sarah said, given the many digressions, this is a boring one. So let's wrap it up with our most valuable player. God.
That sounded like you're doing the least valuable.
I know. I have to think about who was
Carol
the least
Potter.
Objectionable. Yeah. Cindy. I'll say Cindy.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. I can hang with that. She was amusing. Least valuable player.
Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon. For reasons that
will
be, as
there
we
are
said,
other valid choices, but like just for the why I oughta punch gesture that wasn't really a why I oughta. Like I think he actually wanted to punch her in the face.
Yeah. I co-sign that, and as we said, this will become even more obvious in the next episode why that was extremely inappropriate. It would be under any circumstances, but especially about what we're about to learn about Jill makes it especially bad. Moving on, speaking of Brandon and his terribleness, to the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. 5 ways from this episode, Brandon could have ended up dead. Well, he was clutching that toaster oven pretty hard, so if he had taken it up to the bathroom and gotten in the tub with it, that might have ended up killing him.
Maced and kicked in the balls to death by a practicing witch.
If the terrible haircut that he got had finished him off, so if the errant clipper went the wrong way and cut his jugular. Speaking of which, did you want to mention his haircut?
I will get to that because he hasn't actually had it yet.
Oh, it's for the next week. Okay, sorry.
Like he got one haircut and then there's like another step that he had to go through.
Yeah. If he went to try and hug his shirt in its glass display case at the Peach Pit and pulled it off the wall and got spliced at ribbons with all the broken glass.
Gets too close to the water's edge with a ton of sand in his gigantic toaster oven sized laptops. Gets pulled out to sea and drowns because they're so heavy that he can't come up for air.
Let's just say strangled with his flannel while drunk, because apparently he drinks now. Makes five.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. Still more talk of her finances? Believe it or not, yes.
Wow.
But Shannon also owned, there's still, like, Oh, there's still like another two pages of this chapter. So Shannon also owed $14,000 in back rent and security on her Doheny Drive digs. Her landlord, Mark Nishimura, filed suit to evict the 90210 star, claiming she failed to pay the $6,500 rent for 2 months, with the pot growing at $250 per day fair rental value, and ignored
she was growing pot?
That's how I read it too. the pot she owed. And ignored a pay or quit eviction notice. The suit was one that Doherty apparently didn't care to try on. This testimony said that defendant Doherty informed the plaintiff of several dates for inspection of the premises prior to her anticipated vacation, but canceled each date or didn't appear at all. This behavior is compounded by the defendant Shannon Doherty's statements to the plaintiff of her possession, get this, of two killer attack dogs, not just attack dogs, on the premises for security purposes, and the pre-move-out inspection cannot be held until they are secured. Plaintiff's individual and unique real and personal property with high-end market artworks, I doubt it, and accessories at the premises are valued at well over $1.9 million, doubt that too, and necessitates a pre-move-out inspection for damage and insurance purposes in properly attributing damages. Is there any way she could have bought $1.9 million of stuff? She's like Joey buying all the stuff on Friends. Like, she's got some kind of plaster dog that she's really attached to. A killer attack plaster dog. Anyway, that's the end of our excerpt.
Oh, God. Next time, Dylan and Kelly hate each other in flashbacks to France. Felice hates Donna's sinful living arrangements. Brenda hates Darla because, duh, and Robia Lamorte hates her agent for sticking her with a teeny tiny love interest with a boot brush clamped to his noggin. Speaking of boots, that's probably what you're going to do when you peep our visual aids on our website at previously.tv, which you can also follow on Twitter at previouslytv. You can follow my fine feathered co-host Tara Ariano on Twitter at Tara Ariano. I'm Sarah D. Bunting and I'm at Tomato Nation. And let's not forget our producer, David T. Cole, who is on Instagram at Glark. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
Was that boot as a as puke as barf? Yeah, have you never heard that before? I've never heard that before. God, your vocabulary is really growing today. I love it.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.